You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What is good, everybody? Welcome one and all to TGI Football on the SB Nation NFL Show, presented by DraftKings Fantasy Sports. Check out what DraftKings has to offer this season with code SBNFL, because life is more fun when you are in on the action. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions do apply. Void or prohibited. See DraftKings.com for details. As noted, this is TGI Football on the SB Nation NFL Show. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, of course, Apple devices, Spotify, etc. You can always watch on the SB Nation NFL YouTube channel as well. If you do any of those things, you will be consumed by the incredible football and really life analysis of myself. I'm RJ Ochoa from Blog of the Boys. They are Bleeding Green Nation's own Brandon Lee, got into Narrowhead Pride Zone, Steven Serta. Steven, happy February to you. February 2nd, Deuce is wild.
Yeah.
Okay, I had a lot of energy, and then yeah.
I mean, I didn't know if I supposed to be like celebrating the Chiefs are in another Super Bowl, going for back to back. It's against the 49ers again, where the Super Bowl run started. Like, it's all coming full circle, especially in a season where everybody discounted the Chiefs and was like, they're broken, they're not going to get back, and here we are again.
Brandon, you notoriously have a problem with the fact that Steven is an NFL agnostic and that he chooses to not really support a team. And so while that is kind of already stuck in your craw, does it not get a little bit deeper in there that the team he is sort of, you know, tied to from an allegiance standpoint is this perennially great, always in the mix, always in the Super Bowl, winning world championships, having incredible things, success all the time sort of group?
No. I would say not, because I know Steven works hard, and yeah, when you work hard, I feel like it's only fair that you get to cover a team who actually does something in the playoffs. Maybe you can learn a thing or two about that, RJ.
So you're saying I don't work hard, just to be very clear. That's the implication around here. All right.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all proportional.
You know, I'd say our colleagues would all probably agree with that. So, you know, shout out to everyone around here who does a lot of great work, like Jeremy Reisman, who's doing a lot of great work about the Detroit Lions, who lost the NFC Championship game. You know, just as one random example. You know what I mean?
Tough to take shots at the Lions.
I will take shots because that's all I can do. Steven, will you please explain to the audience what game we will be previewing this week on TGI Football, with the Super Bowl not taking place until next Sunday?
I don't know. Are we previewing the Pro Bowl or something? Because I don't even know what happens there anymore.
Well, we don't have to preview it. I guess we can discuss what we've seen so far. Like, you know, as an example, just randomly off the top of my head, like Jeremy, Brandon, would you like to discuss Jalen Hurts looking all sorts of loss on the passing skills competition and not really hitting any targets, questioning his abilities as a passer, you know, in general? Again, off the top of my head completely.
A very real, applicable one-to-one to actual football is this moving target drill. And even the center thing, which I've seen a clips of Jason Kelce doing that and getting guff for not doing well. And it's not even like a real, that's like a long snapper drill. It's not like a center drill. Like, anyway, so that's my extent of the Pro Bowl has been seeing these clips go around, but not actually really caring at all.
Okay.
Is it still in Hawaii? I don't even know where it's at.
No,
it's
in Orlando. I don't think so. It doesn't feel canonical, right? I think we can all agree with that. Like, it doesn't, like, I see this happening, but like, what am I gonna do? Like, write a post about this? Like, or no, like, who cares? None of this matters.
I mentioned this to a friend. So we would agree that, like, the, you know, MLB All-Star game at the very least has the home run derby, right? Like, you know, it's the middle of the summer, so maybe there's like a, you know, that day you're like, oh, I'll throw this on in the background while I'm preparing dinner, right? Like, you have a you know, kind of a pulse beat level of interest in that. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, like, it's a good summer night activity.
Right, okay.
Usually, because especially too, because there's nothing else going on. Like, that time of year, right? It's just baseball pretty much. So it's just like, yeah, whatever, I'll just put that on.
So we've got that. So even baseball, like the sport who focuses least on marketing themselves as opposed to, you know, the other major sports in America, has that. The NBA, kind of pick what you want, Stephen, but they do have, you know, even if you're not into the All-Star game, they have the three-point contest, they have the dunk contest, and those are watered-down affairs, but still, they're more interesting than really anything happening at the Pro Bowl right now.
Yeah, the NBA All-Star Weekend is an event. I would love to go to one of those. I've never been to one, but they look like a ton of fun, and they're at least like entertaining. Like, it's a good television product. I don't know that anything that's going on at the Pro Bowl is an actual good television product at this point.
I have been to one All-Star Weekend. It was in Houston, and it was when Philadelphia 76ers player Andre Iguodala lost the slam dunk contest to Nate Robinson.
Yeah, jumped over
Spud Webb. Oh, he didn't get robbed. He got Robinson. It was Nate Robinson who beat him in that. I mean, did Iggy jump over anybody? No, because Nate Robinson did. So
yeah, he took like, what, 50 attempts to do it?
It wasn't 50. It was maybe two. Actually, no, I think it was
more
the first
than
one.
That. It was more.
Okay,
than
well,
that.
I was there in person. Were you? No, that's right. I saw it. Thank you very much. Boom. Case closed. We have no games to discuss. So instead, what we're going to do is basically rip on all of the new NFL head coaches. I think that sounds like a fun and worthwhile activity. Now that all of the vacancies have been filled ahead of the Pro Bowl, if you want to look at that as kind of a point of demarcation. So I guess let's start in reverse chronological order. BLG, you and I were dancing around the idea of Dan Quinn becoming the Washington Commanders head coach. And I don't want to put words in either of our mouths, but we were kind of like, there's no way that they would do this because this would be such a fail. Now, while we recorded the NFC's mixtape, Ben Johnson announced that he basically didn't want this job. Again, I am kind of putting words in his mouth there. But Dan Quinn is the newest head coach of the Washington Commanders. There's a real incestual nature to the NFC East, what with Kellen Moore now as the offensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles.
I really don't get this hire for the Commanders. Like, this is very NFC, former NFC South coach who lost in the Super Bowl and has been kind of middling. Okay, am I talking about Ron Rivera? Am I talking about Dan Quinn there? I mean, it's just like, what, how is this a needle moving kind of decision? It just feels all about raising the floor, which is not what the Commanders should really be so much concerned about. They should be shooting for the stars. They should be going for high upside, exciting. Because and unlike a lot of other teams, they have a bigger grace period than so many other organizations because of coming off of Dan Snyder to a new ownership. So, like, I just think they should be swinging for the fences, and I don't think that's what they're doing here at all. I mean, how do you sell, oh, we're hiring the right guy for us to finally get us over the hump, this back to our glory days, is the guy who oversaw the worst Super Bowl collapse in NFL history. Like, how are you selling that as what is this great thing about the new era of Commanders football, especially when it should all be all about, hey, we have the number two pick. We're going to get this offensive mastermind in here to pair with him to really, you know, have him take over. And instead, we're hiring this guy who has a good track record as a defensive coordinator, head coach, been mediocre. I think it's tough to go from the idea of Ben Johnson or even Mike McDonald, who also defensive guy, but like this on the cusp of maybe this new kind of defensive thinking in the NFL, something exciting, as opposed to a retread and maybe bringing in Chip Kelly as your offensive coordinator. Like, are you serious? Are you kidding me?
It sounded like you had more to say there. Like, you kind of sounded like you cut yourself off like mid-sentence. I don't know if that was supposed to be for dramatic effect or anything. Steven, you got that vibe too, right? Like,
yeah. Okay, I was not ready. Okay. Chip Kelly really just brick walled it, by, I guess there.
Well, your thoughts, Steven, on Dan Quinn and whether or not is, for what it's worth, I was browsing and perusing the Commanders subreddit and they all hated this. They all were just, they were so mad at Ben Johnson, and they feel the word I saw was whelmed, not over, not under, but just whelmed.
I think Commanders fans should be disappointed by this. You know, I think we have a large enough sample size of Dan Quinn. We know exactly what he is. And if you wanted Ron Rivera gone and you didn't like where they were going with him, which, why would you? Like, they weren't going anywhere with him. It feels like the exact same situation here, where you're just like, okay, well, we dumped assets last year, cleared out money. We thought we were going to be better than we wound up being, and somehow fell into the number two overall pick in the draft. And so we're going to take a quarterback after they just spent half a season trying to convince you that Sam Howell was the franchise quarterback. And that obviously didn't work. And then it makes you question, like, yeah, it seems like the Commanders really went all in on landing Ben Johnson or Mike Macdonald and had to wait this thing out and see how things went in the playoffs to make that official. And then it didn't work out in either way. And I want to talk about Mike Macdonald because I'm excited for where he landed, but it felt like they pushed all their chips in and then scrambled because they didn't have a backup plan. And it makes you question like the new ownership and the direction and everything, because everybody, as soon as the regular season ended, it was, oh, Washington's in a really nice spot. They got new ownership. They're interested in winning now. They've got this draft capital. They got all this money. Like, this is a great spot for a young head coach to come in and really leave his stamp on the organization. And you just had to go in the total opposite direction because you didn't leave yourself a backup plan. If Ben Johnson just decided like, hey, it's really important to me to see this thing through in Detroit. I love the people that I work with. I love the team that we put together. We think we can be right back there. And there's no way that anybody anticipated that, like, because you just don't usually see guys say no to head coaching opportunities. I appreciate the hell out of what Ben Johnson did in this situation. Like, no, I want to go see this thing through. It's more important to me to work with Dan Campbell and the staff and all the guys that we have there. I think that's tremendous. I think not enough people do that. But it also makes me question how that job is viewed now and how Washington is viewed, even with new ownership and the new situation and trying to move in the right direction, because like, why wouldn't anybody be interested in that? Like, of course, Dan Quinn is. Of course, Dan Quinn's like, yes. Oh, you're going to offer me the head coaching job? Absolutely. I'll take it in a heartbeat. Like, it's hard to feel good about any of that in what was supposed to be an exciting offseason for a franchise that has been bad for a really long time.
I have a lot of thoughts on this and obviously have shared them throughout the Black and the Boys universe. It did seem like a scramble. I think that's pretty obvious. It feels like you both do some, you know, sports wagering, but you know, if you're doing like, you know, like one of these prop bet, you know, kind of platforms or whatever, and you've got like one you really like and you go to add like one to make it the final parlay or whatever you're setting up. And it's like, oh, that one's unavailable, you know, now. And it's like 5 minutes till tip off or kickoff. You're like, oh crap. I need something to fill this out. And you just go like, this one feels good. I'll just add this one. I kind of like the way this feels. That's what Dan Quinn kind of feels like. Oh, he's been to a Super Bowl and the Cowboys defense has been really good for 3 years. So he's a leader of men. Let's just bring him in. I saw again, the Commander subreddit had all sorts of great jokes. It was like Dan Rivera, Ron Quinn, like all sorts of great stuff. Cause they're basically the same person, like the same archetype, same pathway. And BLG, I always love referencing this, how you talk about how opposing fans feel whenever you do something that involves them. Cowboys fans are celebrating, dancing in the street, get Dan Quinn off of our hands. And all these people who are, I don't want to say carrying the water for Dan Quinn, but they're like, oh man, Cowboys fans are going to miss Dan Quinn. The defense has been, you know, remember the Mike Nolan days in 2020? Just because he's better than the worst option of all time does not mean that like you have to marry him. And also, we shouldn't apply what he did in 2021 or 22 for that matter to our current moment. They were awful. I mean, like downright terrible over the second half of this past season, which again is a point that I've been bringing up continually to each of you. There's lots of record to show that I feel this way. So I agree with you, Steven. Dan, this was the least amount of juice that Dan Quinn ever had in a hiring cycle since he took over as the Cowboys defensive coordinator. In fact, he turned down jobs. He was Ben Johnson. And I think it's kind of a lesson of, you know, your iron will not always stay hot. I think that Ben Johnson would have been, I think we all agree, the best hire, whoever would have hired him this cycle, right? We all would. I think Mike Vrabel would have been the best hire, whoever would have hired him this cycle. I think Bill Belichick would have had a weird kind of best energy around him just because of who he is. And the more I've thought about it, I think they all are looking at next year's cycle and who could, like what teams could be available and might be more interested. You think about Dallas, Philadelphia, you know, our potential New options, New York maybe, or Chicago if Caleb Williams is there, right?
Like, both New York jobs, to be clear.
Oh yeah, that's a great point. Maybe Buffalo for that matter, right? Like you can marry yourself. You know, it feels like the Chargers, who had the most desirable variable that any team could have had, Brandon, with Justin Herbert. Those options could be much more in quantity next offseason with the quarterbacks of the teams I just mentioned.
One last thing I want to say in the Commanders part is there was a leak, I guess, from Schefter, seemingly from, I'm guessing, Commanders ownership.
Oh, this is so sad.
This idea that like part of the reason that Ben Johnson, you know, wasn't hired is because his asking price was too high. That is absolute garbage. There's no salary cap for coaches. Fans should not care at all what a head coach is asking for. If you're not hiring a head coach because like you're trying to get a candidate on a budget, that's pathetic. if you love a candidate and he's great, you should take literally whatever it takes to pay him to get him in your building. That should never be an acceptable reason why you did not hire a candidate, is because their asking price was too high. That's ridiculous to me. That's pathetic. That, I mean, I get, you know, Schefter puts that out there because it's part of the game in terms of agents and sources and whatnot. But no fan out there should be using that as a reason. Well, like, well, we couldn't get Ben Johnson because you wanted too much money. No, if you're doing that, that is exactly what a billionaire owner wants you to think is acceptable. And I just think it's pathetic.
And again, credit to Ben Johnson for saying, this is what it's going to take for me to leave Detroit. And if you want to give me that, then okay, I'll leave. And they didn't do it. And that what's also insane about them putting that out there to try to paint this picture of Ben Johnson, like, no, he was being unreasonable. That's why we didn't hire him. Like, they don't have to make coaches' salaries public knowledge. Like, there's lots of head coaches of the NFL. We have no idea what they're making. Most we just kind of speculate what their salaries are. Like, they could have paid Ben Johnson $25 million a year, and they would never have to tell anyone about that. Mm-hmm. Like, It's just pettiness by an organization, which again, like, it's like, okay, new ownership. Are we sure they're headed in the right direction now all of a sudden? Because it felt like they were. And now it's like, nobody seems to want that job. And like Belichick, I could understand, because I don't think Belichick wants to go through a rebuild and have like a young quarterback and try to put in the years. Cause he probably doesn't have that much time left. It seems like Vrabel doesn't really want to do that either, even though Vrabel's a younger guy and you would think would just want to go to a good situation. But the fact that Vrabel somehow wasn't the backup plan and Dan Quinn was is questionable.
My last thing on the Josh Harris of it all is, I mean, these are real concerns on the Sixers end. I can speak to this, where there have been times where they haven't been willing to pay the luxury tax. And there's also been more than one example where they've straight up sold second round picks in the NBA, which that doesn't give you cap space. That just puts literally just takes money and it puts it in the owner's pocket. The team doesn't benefit from that at all. Just the owner making himself richer. So it's a little funny to me that I've seen that and now I'm seeing this, the owner potentially being cheap in another situation. And I think that's pretty disheartening if you're a Commanders fan.
I think it's funny because the fact that Josh Harris also owns the Sixers has been a big issue for you as a Sixers fan, but it's kind of in this case kind of helping the Eagles because it's, you know, serving as a detriment to the Commander. So hope you feel silly, Brandon.
Well, I mean, then that doesn't make me feel good about the Sixers, though.
Feel silly. It's okay. Mike McDonald, Steven, you said I want to talk about him. I should mention, by the way, we're sort of, I wouldn't say grading, but evaluating all of these. James Dater wrote about this at SBNation.com. Everybody can go read it. For the purposes of kind of continuity, give me a letter grade, Brandon, Steven, for Dan Quinn.
For Dan Quinn, I'm going to say a C-.
Steven.
I'm going to say D.
That's what James gave. So Steven is correct so far. We've developed a nice little game for this episode of TGF Football. So let's move on to Mike Donald. Steven, what do you think James graded the move, and what do you grade it?
I would think it would be an A, because that's what I would give it.
I'll give you partial credit. You gave it an A+.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. Well, yeah, right in the same range.
Oh, crap. I didn't let Brandon guess. The game is run. Sorry. But go
ahead.
I'm
going to say B+.
Sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
So I really like this hire. And obviously, I think that like it's pretty clear that the Seattle Seahawks right now are in a better position to win. Now, I still think at some point they've got to make a decision quarterback wise. Like, Geno's been fine, and Geno, you can win games with Geno as long as they continue to, you know, draft players. And then they've had a couple of pretty good drafts here in recent years, and they still have some players like, you know, Tyler Lockett's a guy they probably got to make a decision on this offseason. But I think it's a perfect transition head coach. Like, you get this young defensive minded head coach who can bring a lot of stability to your franchise after you were just stable for so long with Pete Carroll. And it's kind of the same mentality where like, they're going to try to build on the defensive side of the ball. And they've already got some really nice pieces there in Seattle on that side of the ball. And I really like what Mike McDonald did with the Ravens. And I think he's going to be a really good head coach. So I think this is a huge hire for them. And I would have to imagine whatever he wanted money wise, they were like, sure, we got you because you were our top candidate. And so I think it's a really good situation. I think there's still questions about Seattle moving forward and what they decide to do with the quarterback position and what they want to build for the future. But I think this is a home run hire, and it feels like they're not going to probably have much of a drop off, I would imagine, in year one, going from Pete Carroll to Mike McDonald.
I like the upside swing they're going for here. Obviously, we don't know what Mike McDonald is. I almost did that. The Mike McDaniel. That's going to be confusing. Thankfully, they're not like in the same division or something. They're pretty much as far as they could.
They're going to meet in the Super Bowl after this. And
there you go.
Be a thing.
Did you know they almost have the same name? Will be a popular storyline, I'm sure. But yeah, obviously, with any defensive coach, Dan Quinn included in here, the offensive coordinator hire is going to be huge. We'll see what they do on that end. But I like the upside swing here. It feels to me like this could be like, and this is, you know, a big like leap of faith to make, and a lot has to be proven before he gets there. But this feels like maybe this could be the next Pete Carroll, and maybe this could be the next culture setter. It seems like there is something there with the Ravens and having this Aaron McDonald and the style of defense that maybe that's like the new, like cutting edge of what's popular in the NFL, the new Vic Fangio style that everyone is chasing after. So maybe they're kind of getting ahead of the curve a bit on that. So I'm intrigued by this. I think A plus is a little too much because there's still a lot of unproven quality here. And again, really going to depend what happens with the offense still, because there's a lot to be figured out there. But I like the upside.
I do think this is the best hire in terms of, I think the Jim Harbaugh thing is kind of in its own unique box, and we'll get there in a moment. But I think I agree with you, Brandon. It has the biggest upside in terms of like he could be around for a decade, and you don't necessarily feel that about every hire. Not just like the Dan Quinn one with Sanding. Like, I don't know that we feel that confident in Dave Canales in Carolina as an example. Like, there's a much more proven kind of track record, even though it's a small sample size for McDonald, that is worth believing in. Something I thought was interesting is we had KJ Wright on my radio show in San Antonio on Thursday, and he does radio in Seattle, and he was asked, why not Dan Quinn? Because obviously Quinn was connected to him and KJ obviously played for him. And he said that the like general vibe is people wanted a reset. Like, they wanted to kind of disconnect and move on from the Pete Carroll era, not in a negative way, but I do think that there's value in that, Steven, in saying like I look at the Cowboys as an example. You can go all the way back to when they first hired Jason Garrett in 2007, and they've always had somebody stay on staff every time there's been a change in power. And there is something nice to having a clean break, even if you believe it's the same general sort of type of head coach. Getting a whole new fresh set of eyes and fresh set of people in the building is a positive thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, it's, for some reason, it keeps getting brought up year after year now. Like, what are the Chiefs going to do when Andy Reid retires? And what's the succession plan?
He's a little older. Yeah. That's a fair thing to wonder about, is all I'm saying.
Sure, but it's Andy, year after year, is like, no, stop asking me about that. I'm not thinking about it whatsoever. But like for a long time, it was like, oh, maybe Eric Bieniemy is the successor. Or now it's Matt Nagy. And like, I totally agree with that approach. Like, several ties. Like, when Andy Reid retires, let's go find somebody. Let's go find a new, young, innovative guy or another guy that you feel comfortable with. Because I do think that there's this level of like complacency sometimes in the NFL where you get scared of the unknown and you get scared of making bets on other people, especially if you've had success with what you have. And I think it's just a bad way to approach things in football, because things change so fast and situations change so fast. Even like Andy Reid's time in Philadelphia, like at the end, was bad. And I think that was because he was doing too many things and had too much control over the organization. He hasn't had any of that here in Kansas City. It's worked out really well, but I still think like Brett Veach is great for the structure of the franchise, but I think every team in the league should be doing that. The idea that let's just go get this retread guy and he's going to find success. Like, it's, like the Raheem Morris thing. I think that could be a successful thing because it's a little bit different of a circumstance than it is like a Dan Quinn. Like, we know exactly Dan Quinn's the same thing as Ron Rivera. You knew exactly what you were getting when they hired him, and it's impossible to feel good about that. Like, I would always rather go for the unknown guy who's got something to prove than somebody who we know exactly who he's going to be and what he's going to accomplish.
BLG, the Atlanta Falcons chose Raheem Morris over Bill Belichick, and that's all anybody kind of cares to discuss from it all. Never mind the glowing reviews that Raheem Morris is generating. But that's when you do something like this, when you wine and dine Belichick the way that Atlanta did so publicly, you do kind of open yourself up to the scrutiny.
This is a different kind of retread hire, I think, than a lot of other ones, to Steven's point there. Like, this is a big gap that Raheem Morris, you know, going back to when he was head coach of the Bucks, and also like just how extremely young he was back then. And I don't even think he did that bad of a job in Tampa his first go around, as much as it's just that, you know, expectations there were obviously very high coming off of what John Gruden did. And again, an extremely young candidate at the time. So, and after that, kind of almost had to like rebuild his career, was going from like, you know, position coach to coordinator. Like, he had to like kind of like really rebuild himself all the way back up. So I think there's an appeal to that. And I think you look at, you know, obviously his most recent results and how it seems to me that's exactly what you want out of coaching, is taking talent that isn't necessarily awesome, or if it is, even making it, you know, making the talent better, perform at a higher level, getting the most out of what you have. And I think there's a case to be made that Raheem Morris did that. So I'm actually pretty interested to see how the Raheem Morris goes. Again, like I just said with McDonald and Quinn, it really comes down to, okay, can you nail the offensive coordinator hire? And the Falcons very much need a quarterback, because unlike everyone else, I've been the only one willing to say Desmond Ridder is certainly not the solution there. So I'm intrigued by that as well. And look, I've also been very much on the Bill Belichick. I don't really feel great about him post Brady thing, so I'm pretty okay with that.
Yeah, it's with Belichick, it just feels like that there really is no like give and take with him. Like, it seems like he's going in there and he's like, I want control of everything top to bottom. You're not going to have influence on any decision that we make. And why would you hire him if that's the case? Like, if you want to be a well-run functional organization, like we see this all the time, like the 49ers consistently draft well, are consistently back in the mix, and Kyle Shanahan has heavy influence on all the decisions they make, but their front office is also really good, and they've identified really talented players and continued to draft guys who wind up being contributors on the roster. Like, just look at functional organizations across the league, and that's a common theme, whereas Bill Belichick over the last several years has been the worst general manager in football. So, like, I wouldn't be interested in giving Belichick the keys to everything and have him being the sole decision maker of my organization. So I applaud the Falcons for kind of whining and dining Belichick and making it seem like, oh, he's our top candidate, and then just saying, yeah, actually, we're good. We're going to go in another direction. Like, I'm kind of excited for what the Falcons do, depending on the quarterback situation. That's obviously the biggest thing they have to address. But we know they have the offensive talent. They've got a reasonable offensive line. We know they've got the skill position players. And their defense was kind of one of the more overlooked units this past season. Like, they were pretty good on that side of the ball, and they've got some talent over there. So I actually think the Falcons, I think this is a good hire. I'm excited to see where it goes and how their offseason kind of plays out.
Definitely interested in the Raheem Morris angle. I think it's definitely obvious that Arthur Blank is maybe regretful on not promoting him, you know, when he had the opportunity after the 2020 season when he was the interim. I'm just a little bit less inclined to buy the Atlanta turned down Bill Belichick of this all. I think that, you know, in the experience of, you know, tracking Sean Payton rumors for an entire year when he was not, you know, coaching in the NFL, there is a lot of value to being the unknown legend. And that was just the legend of Sean Payton, which is a fraction of what Bill Belichick's is. I mean, Bill can take some time, reassess, build a barn in a football warehouse if he wants to, like McCarthy swore he did, and be constantly connected to everything. I mean, as time goes on, people will forget a little bit of this, or it will be further in the distant memory, and he'll be wined and dined by everybody next coaching cycle, and we'll potentially have better options. I mean, again, I know that we're assuming a lot of things in the future, but it makes a lot more sense to want to coach the Eagles or the Cowboys or the Bears or the Bills or whoever a year from now than the Falcons right now, just because you want to itch to get back in things right away.
We're not even a year from now. There's going to be, as if a team like whoever, the Eagles or the Cowboys, whatever the teams you just mentioned, gets off to like an 0-5 start or whatever, there's going to be rumors like Bill Belichick's coming in now, like in season to save the season or whatever. Like, that'll be a thing.
That's exactly what it was like with Sean Payton. I mean, and I don't foresee Bill doing as many appearances, for lack of a better word, as Sean Payton did. But I mean, Sean Payton worked for Fox and did all sorts of podcasts. And anytime he did, he was asked about the Cowboys job, and it was great content for us. But I mean, it just never, ever, ever went away. And I mean, the teams that we think could have new or could have head coach openings, I should say, are premier teams, very, very vocal and visible teams with, you know, star quarterback situations. So that's all. That's the only part where I'm zigging a little bit, where everybody's zagging. Like, I don't buy that Belichick was like begging the Falcons for the job, and they were like, you know, tossed their hair in his face. We're like, we're good, Bill. You know, Raheem Morris is our guy. Jim Harbaugh, Steven.
A plus.
It seems that Brandon has found the article at SBNation.com.
I'm not giving, sorry, with all due respect to James, I don't like care about it. I'm giving my grades. I can't speak for him, but I'm giving my grades.
So not only has Brandon, you know, trampled all over James's hard work, he also spoke James's out of turn. He also spoke out of turn because, Stephen, it was your turn. What I was going to say, Stephen, is I am already annoyed at Jim Harbaugh. The Chargers have gotten so much love and attention for absolutely nothing.
They're back,
years.
Baby.
And now Jim Harbaugh is just here and is ruining the quiet and peace that we kind of had for about 2 months. I mean, they are going to be obnoxious. And even when the Chiefs win the Super Bowl next week, in all likelihood, they're going to have won 3 Super Bowls in a 5-year span. And it's going to be like, watch out for the Chargers in the AFC West. And I hate every bit of it.
Yeah, it's so I think it's a great hire. I agree with BLG. It's an A+. I think Harbaugh is a winner. I think he will turn the culture around. I think he will get his fingerprints all over the roster and all of that stuff. Now, if he can overcome the curse of the Chargers, that's a different story. But I think it's a great hire. And it's like we've spent all these years now just like, Chargers are going to take this step forward. The Chargers are finally going to get over the hump. And it just kept not happening. And it felt like, I think we talked about it ahead of the season. Like, they should have fired Brandon Staley after last year. Like, them just wasting this year was ridiculous. But they landed Harbaugh because of it. So that's fine. But they've got a ton of decisions to make this offseason. Like, they got to decide what they're going to do with Keenan Allen. They gave Mike Williams a bunch of money. Now he's coming off of a serious injury. Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack. Like, they owe so much money on the defensive side of the ball, and their defense was terrible this year. Like, they've got so many question marks just roster-wise. Like, Harbaugh's really going to have to take some swings, and they're going to have to draft and develop. Because I think they're going to move in the right direction, obviously. Justin Herbert comes back and you can keep him healthy. Like, he's a top 5 quarterback in the NFL, in my opinion. And I think that they can eventually challenge the Chiefs in the AFC West. But I still think that they're going to be a year or two away from this, from actually like contending with the Chiefs, because Austin Eckler is about to be a free agent. Like, it just feels like their roster's kind of aged out at this point. And they've really got to draft and develop some young players and get some pieces around Herbert, because I don't think they can win with the current makeup of their roster.
I'm excited. I'm all the way back in. After being out on the Chargers reluctantly, but necessarily, I'm back, baby. Because I've been a Harbaugh guy. I'm not like a big college football guy, but back on the 49ers, I felt like I've said this before, I feel like somehow he didn't get enough credit for how good those 49ers teams were. And and obviously how his time there kind of ended unceremoniously, and in no small part due to Trent Baalke, who clearly was not the driver of success that he thought he was and everyone wanted him to be, or that was kind of how it was spun at the time. You know, they obviously kept Baalke over Jim Harbaugh. So I'm really excited to see what he can do. Justin Herbert has to be a lot better. Obviously, I rip on Lamar, as RJ likes to point out, but apparently I don't say anything bad about Justin Herbert. Not true. He has to do something in the playoffs after doing nothing, basically, except being part of an epic collapse to this point. But I think Harbaugh will be the coach to help him do just that.
I thought I was muted for a second. At the very least, the Chargers finally have an actual bona fide superstar. Justin Herbert is incredibly talented, but I mean, I don't think it's, you know, ridiculous to say he doesn't have the level of football fame that Jim Harbaugh does. He's not the level of football character that Jim Harbaugh is. In fact, he kind of, you know, shucks and runs away from that spotlight, where Harbaugh embraces it. So at the very least, there is a sun at the center of universe of hype for the Chargers. And so it makes logical sense, but it is still really annoying. I agree with both of you, though. Like, he's the first adult in the room for the Chargers since what? I mean, Norv Turner. I mean that and that's a bit of a stretch. I mean, it's been a very, very, very long time, and so I'm excited. It will be great content one way or another to consume, and for that I'm grateful. The aforementioned Dave Canales, this was kind of the one that I think caught everybody a little bit by surprise, even though the Bucks obviously had an impressive offensive rise over the second half of the season and through the, you know, they were impressive in the playoffs. I know that they were outmatched by Detroit, but this really did, Stephen, feel like nobody, and I don't mean this in any disrespectful way towards Dave Canales, but none of the heavy hitters want this job. It felt like question around David Tepper. It took, you know, maybe taking a chance on a little bit more of an unknown quantity. That being said, I do think this is a solid unknown to kind of roll some dice on. There are a lot of worse directions. Like, I think this is a better move for Carolina than even Dan Quinn as an example, because you have the chance of the young hotshot offensive mind revolutionizing your team and hopefully resuscitating Bryce Young's career, even though it's only his second season.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of reasons why nobody wanted this job. Like, you don't have the number one overall pick and your roster is terrible. So I understand why Dave Canales took this job, and I totally agree. Like, I think it seemed like the top candidates just weren't interested. And I think it's pretty clear that David Tepper is not a guy that is liked by coaches across the league. And it is not really an owner that is respected right now. And it seems like he is not really fun to work for. But you got to take your chances in hiring a young offensive-minded head coach who is going to come in and try to see what you have in Bryce Young and hopefully put some more pieces around him is really the best you could hope for at this point with what David Tepper has done so far during his ownership of the Carolina Panthers.
I like the idea of maybe getting a coach like a year too early, if you will.
Right.
You know, I think Canales could have been, you know, this candidate that maybe the Panthers wouldn't have been able to hire, whatever. I know that timing might not work out depending on, you know, who else they hired. It's not like they'd be hiring again, potentially. Well, who knows, next year. But I like the thinking of getting a guy maybe a little bit earlier. Maybe they, you know, are willing to accept some of the growing pains that'll come along with that, as opposed to, you know, needing this win now, instant kind of fix. I think. And also, you know, you weaken a division rival, potentially. It's a nice little bonus. But I just think it comes down to, you know, is Bryce Young any good? Like, can he play in the NFL? And there are really kind of big concerns about that. And that exists kind of makes me worry and wonder about his future in Carolina. Just any, like, what is the ceiling for him if you just have a total non-starter at quarterback? And that's what I worry about.
It's strange to say the least, but, you know, I feel better about the Panthers than I have. Not, I don't feel good about them, but I feel better about them. This is the best you felt about the Panthers since when, Steven?
I don't know. Like Pete Cam Newton.
So, I mean, wow.
I mean, so, that there, and I will say, like, Bryce Young, I think it's clear he's got physical limitations as an NFL quarterback. Like, and we all knew that. And I think not enough was made of that ahead of him being drafted. But also, their offensive line was complete and utter garbage last year. Their pass catchers, complete and utter garbage. All due respect to Adam Thielen. Like, he wound up having a decent year because he was the only guy in that wide receiver room who could make any kinds of plays for them. And the running game was terrible. Like, their whole offense was just totally dysfunctional and totally failed Bryce Young on every level in his rookie season. So I don't think it can get any worse than it was last year for Bryce Young, at the very least.
I had a mic issue. My mic came unplugged and I had to plug it back in. It was a big old deal. I'm back. But I don't know that we have to discuss the Jerod Mayo, Antonio Pierce, and Brian Callahan hires because it's been a while. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like enough's been said. I don't know if y'all.
I had one last thing on Canales. Like, is there any chance the Panthers would sign Baker? Bring him back to Carolina?
Why not?
They should. I don't think you should just put all your eggs in the Bryce Young basket.
On the subject of that, let's play three questions based on now that we know the answers to all the head coaching kind of, you know, situations. And there's a lot, you know, a little bit of time to go before free agency. But nevertheless, I'm going to spin a wheel with three questions and you each have to answer them. Are you ready?
Yep.
Yes.
Where is Kirk Cousins playing football?
Wait, where's the wheel being spun? You have to spin the wheel.
It's not really a wheel. It's three questions. I know the questions. Like, I'm not, you know, it would be a wheel of three things.
Where's the wheel coming into play?
It was an analogy that hopefully was going to fly over people's heads because it didn't work out too well. But thank you for exposing it.
The best I can do right now on such short notice.
Where is Kirk Cousins playing football in 2024? Steven?
I'm going to say with the Vikings. I don't think he's going anywhere.
Let's be interesting.
The hypothetical, not the most likely non-Vikings team.
Yeah, let's say the most likely non-Vikings team.
What do you mean? Let's say I just said it. Like, you don't get credit for crafting the question that I just crafted. And it's Steven's question to answer.
I was agreeing with you.
Okay, Steven, please.
Sorry. Okay, then I will say the Falcons.
I'm trying to think. Who needs a quarterback? RJ, so what do you think?
Well, the not the Saints options. Who just gave Derek Carr.
Yeah, insane.
So the Falcons make a lot of sense. As an option. The Steelers make a lot of sense as an option, although
they would never sign him. No.
The Raiders.
Yeah. The Raiders and Broncos are both gonna be looking for a quarterback potentially. I guess they got Levis, so no on the Titans. And Colts have Anthony Richardson.
I'd like to see Kirk and Sean Payton. That feels like a fit.
Kirk honestly seems to me like the quarterback that could work the best with him. You know what I mean? Like, Kirk isn't about ego and things like that.
If you're looking for like the next Drew Brees, like the next iteration of like kind of Sean Payton Drew Brees offense, I think Kirk would be that.
Man, couldn't you?
And
just
a quarterback who puts up good regular season numbers and then does nothing in the playoffs or underachieves in the playoffs.
Couldn't you just see Sean Payton? Like, I know he's coming off the Achilles, but you know, people said we were crazy to take a chance on Drew when he was coming off the shoulder surgery in 2006. I mean, like, he is so gonna do that. Like, it is inevitable. He wouldn't fit in Vegas.
The personality. No.
Okay. So let's stick with these quarterback things. This, again, most likely destinations that aren't their current teams. And some of these next two in all likelihood involve trades. Russell Wilson, Steve.
I guess he would kind of make sense for the Raiders or Falcons is like, cause I just feel like he's going to be cheap. And so it'll be kind of like a Baker Mayfield thing this past offseason where he signed somewhere for a cheap 1-year contract because nobody wants him really.
The Raiders would be interesting in the sense that he could at least play against the Broncos, but Russell Wilson and Cliff Kingsbury in the same room is not, you know, anything that sounds interesting to me. But
You know who was previously Russell Wilson's quarterback's coach and then passing game coordinator is Dave Canales. So maybe there you go, Carolina, to compete with
Way too big of a stretch.
I mean, I could see Russell Wilson just headed down the Andy Dalton path here, where he just becomes like a high-end backup quarterback for.
He's way too talented for that. He's so much more talented than Andy was when the wheels were falling off.
I think he was really bad last year.
It's more of like he signed somewhere when it's like, you know, musical chairs and there's only one chair left kind of thing, and so he'll just go there wherever that spot is, the only place that will take him.
I'm curious, what is Geno Smith's situation?
Back to Seattle?
No, but that's what, like, I'm looking. He has no guaranteed money left. I mean, you know, he's got it. He's
Russ
on the
book.
No. I'm still thinking Kirk. I'm sorry. Like, you know, I'm not throwing Seattle out of the mix for a quarterback is what I'm saying, but definitely not Russ. Obviously that would be really, that would, wasn't it?
They can't do that. You can't reset the culture with your old quarterback.
No, I know. I'm just saying, but like, was it Brock Osweiler that went back to Denver? That was weird after all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, Justin Fields, Steven, if he's not a Bear, where?
So Justin Fields is the one I would most like to see with the Falcons. Because I think they're just set up with talent right now on the offensive side of the ball. Bijan, Drake London, Kyle Pitts. Like, I would like to see Justin Fields with a decent offensive line and decent skilled position players and hopefully a stable organization around him and what Raheem Morris can hopefully bring. So that would be my number one. Also, Justin Fields to the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think would be awesome. I don't think there's a chance in hell that will happen, but I think the Steelers should seriously look into it. I don't think they're going to, though.
He loses too much for them to be interested in him. Everyone said the Falcons, everyone said the Raiders. So I don't want to say those for the sake of just saying what everyone else has already said. I'm actually looking up every team.
Is it now. The Vikings? If they Vikings
for back somebody there, I could in division. not impossible. Commanders, if no. I'm looking at every team. What about the Browns? Like, what if like the what if the Browns try to hedge their bet on Deshaun Watson?
See, what is this?
Isn't that just bringing Joe Flacco back then at this point?
I don't think they can go. There's no way they can go all in on Deshaun, seeing how they had success with Flacco and also seeing how bad Watson was, not to mention obviously off the field stuff.
As a Justin Fields fan, I do not want that to happen because it does not feel like that's a healthy situation to go to right now.
My computer is spazzing out. So if I lose you both,
let's just wrap it up.
Well, no, last question. I can't see you though. But last question, then we can wrap it up because Steven, you brought up how the Chargers should have fired Brandon Staley a year ago. I think we all said that. Like it was too big of a hill to like overcome. Who is that this year? Like who is the team and the coach that, you know, they should have just broken it off this year? I think I can think of two, and I'll just say them in case I vanish. It's Mike McCarthy with the Cowboys and Nick Sirianni with the Eagles. Like you could totally see like a year from now being like, oh man, this was super obvious that this was not going to go well. But Steven.
Yeah, I think Mike McCarthy is probably the top one. And then I think one that probably isn't going to be talked about enough is the Jets and Robert Saleh and that coaching staff. I think they got to just reset and tear this thing down because banking on 40-plus-year-old Aaron Rodgers coming back off of an Achilles injury and like they keep just dragging their feet and being like, we got a window right now to win, and they keep not doing anything with it, and they have not improved year over year. And this year it was just all the blame on Aaron Rodgers getting hurt. And I just think that they're not a well-run organization and they should be looking to reset things.
I think that's a fair point on the Jets. It felt like really they could have went like 0-17 this year and there wouldn't have been accountability because the plan was like ruined. So, and I think it was always just like, well, this year doesn't count, but that sucks because it should. It can't just be like, well, it doesn't matter now that Rodgers got hurt, so we can't evaluate anything. That's not true. That's wrong, but that's exactly how they handled it.
All right, let's get out of here before my computer self-combusts.
DGIF.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back into TGI Football. RJ Ochoa sat down with Kevin Burkhart and Greg Olson, the Fox NFL Sunday broadcast team, to chat about this year's Super Bowl.
Very pleased now to be joined by two of the most internationally famous, well-known all around the earth and corresponding planets. You know them as Dallas Cowboys fans very, very, very well. From Fox and here today on behalf of DiGiorno's, the one and only Kevin Burkhart and Greg Olson. Kevin, I suppose I throw to you first. How are you doing today?
Great. You know, RJ, we were talking before, and Greg and I joked at one point, you know, because obviously we did a lot of Cowboys games, which we love doing. So we said fans are either going to be like, oh, cool, we get to see those guys again, or holy cow, I never want to see those guys ever again. So I don't know which way that went, but I know speaking for Greg, we loved doing all those Cowboys games. So it's great to see you and be with you today.
Greg, do you know how many Cowboys games you did off the top of your head?
I do. Trust me. We did 9.
That's right. At one point, you had done thrice as many as any other team, although Dallas fell apart, obviously, in the playoffs. You know, thanks for y'all being there and, you know, kind of just telling us all about it the whole time it happened. But San Francisco outlasting everybody gave y'all some more opportunities to do them. And you really did lean into that, Greg. I was telling Kevin right before you got here that I think it was before the Carolina game when you said on the call, like, we're going to be doing Dallas again next week. And I thought, man, they're going to go do the Panthers game. Like, the Panthers have the worst record in the NFL. That's a 1 o'clock game. Like, Kevin and Greg are way too good for this game. Like, what are they sending them to Carolina for? Although your history obviously makes some sense. What was it like kind of experiencing that phenomenon for you, I guess, as the season unfolded?
It was fun. You know, I feel like what was cool, you know, obviously it came to a tough end there in the playoffs for him, but what Kevin and I think enjoyed, and we talked a lot about during the course of the season alongside Dallas, was we were there early on in the season when they were still trying to figure out this new look offense, right? Figure out Dak, figure out Mike McCarthy calling plays, moving on from Kellen Moore, and what a story that was coming into the season. So we were there early on when the story was they couldn't finish drives in the red zone. They couldn't generate explosive plays. But hey, Dak's not turning the ball over, so everything's great. And then they went into the bye after the San Francisco game. We had them coming out, and they were a rocket ship. And we were like, this now is the vision, right? It's the explosive plays, red zone efficiencies picking up, and Dak is still not turning the ball over, and he's probably the MVP of the league, you know, down the stretch of the season. So it was kind of cool to see the evolution, and then we saw a tough back-to-back stretch, you know, with Buffalo and a tough one on Christmas Eve against Miami. But then they bounced back. We saw them in Week 18. So it was – we were kind of there for all the ups and the downs and the evolution of the season. And when you call a team 9 times – you feel like you know them. You feel like you know the third string guard. You feel like you know what, you know, it's just, it's a unique insight into, you know, arguably the most popular team in the NFL. And we enjoyed it all.
Kevin, I'm curious from a play-by-play standpoint, because the Cowboys do generate, as y'all well know, so much attention and viewership. And every time they get a broadcast crew that isn't y'all, we hear the same stories, right? Brandon Aubrey went to Notre Dame. He was drafted in the MLS and all sorts of stuff. So do you approach things as you do have to kind of tell certain stories over and over and over again because you might have so many new transplant audience members? Or is there some stuff that you're willing to kind of bake in and understand that the viewer might understand by December of the regular season?
I think it's a really good question. And like, I can speak to both sides of it, right? When you're coming in, like, let's say a crew's coming in and doing the team for the first time, you know, you feel like you want to just go over the main stories because you're a new group. And be honest, you know, even the most diehard fans don't necessarily see or hear every single minute, right? So that's how it is from one side of it. For us, you know, when we're basically embedded with the team and we know everybody so well and we've gotten so much info on the team, we kind of do the opposite where we're like, okay, there's certain things that obviously that are key points you talk about every single week, right? We're going to talk about Dak and his connection to CeeDee Lamb. We're going to talk about, you know, so some of those things. But we, on a weekly basis, especially when we had them 2-3 weeks in a row, we would always talk as a group, Greg and I and Aaron and Tom and our crew, like, okay, like what are we missing? Or what's a new angle? What are the fans caring about? Or what's something that we haven't done enough of? Just so honestly, fans are interested. And I know, especially again, you're thinking that there are a segment of the fans that certainly aren't going to hear or listen to every single word or every single game, but the diehards, there are some that are. So yeah, we were cognizant of that and tried to make, you know, there's some things that are going to be topics every week, but I think we definitely tried to dive into different things. And that was kind of the cool part is it allowed us to. We got to focus on different players or different nuances. And then obviously each week there's also the game gives you different stories right in front of your face. So it's paying attention what's in front of you too, RJ.
Greg, you've gotten a lot of kudos on the heels of the NFC Championship game. Obviously, you know, there were some divisive moments with Dan Campbell and things like that. And I think it's really clear how much homework you do at understanding trends in the NFL and what people are talking about and marrying all those ideas together. And you seem to have really great instincts, as evidenced by the fact that you sort of called Kevin cursing Brandon Aubrey in the final game of the regular season that y'all had. So, I mean, for context, to kind of your point, Kevin, to explain, Brandon Aubrey had not missed a kick ever in his NFL career, and you danced around it. And Greg, you were like, dude, what are you doing? This is a horrible idea, only to have it be blocked. What is it like, I guess, in that moment, Greg, where then you have to, you obviously have to describe what is happening and react to the block, but also live in the hilarity of the sequence that you just kind of called yourself.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Kevin's really going to ever move on from that. It's been something that has really been haunting him really since that day. And, you know, I'm not sure how he's really going to move on and be able to continue in this field. But
you got to say the story, like starting the night before, though. This is a whole story behind it.
So there's a little backstory to this. So the night before, I give my little dissertation about different storylines and what I think, and Kevin gets a feel for what I'm thinking because he is the master at driving the broadcast, both what's happening on the field, but then when opportunities present, steering it to a way where he knows I'm anxious to talk about CD, whatever the sure. Whatever the storyline we have set up. And he's the master at getting me to a position where not only do I have the opening to discuss it, but it's relevant to what's happening in the game, right? So that's Kevin's secret sauce to why he is who he is. And everybody who works with him obviously gets better as a result. But in this particular case, I get done with my little 20-minute dissertation on the game. And then Kevin's like, hey, something else, you know, we got to be ready for Brandon Aubrey. You know, the season he's had is potentially the greatest field goal kicking season of all time.
Kevin.
And I just made like a throwaway joke, like, I'm not talking about it tomorrow. I am not. Dallas Cowboy fans have already heard us enough. I made it as like in jest, joke, whatever. So it was like a throwaway laugh around the table and we moved on to something else. But in all fairness, it was the – two kicks he missed. But if he finished with no misses with his, you know, what, 950 plus, it was the best field goal kicking season. And it needed to be
– Ever.
Ever.
Yeah, not just for a rookie, to y'all's point. Like, literally ever, right.
Anyone. He was passing, like, Morton Anderson. Or who was he passing? Was it Morton Anderson? Whatever it was.
It was Gary Anderson and Mike Van Der Beek. Yeah.
There you go. So, two historically good. So, the point of the story is, we made, like, a throwaway joke that night, but we're all like, yeah, we got to discuss this. This kid comes on for his first kick. Like, it's a real story. So, just playing off the night before, when Kevin said, I said, hey, man, that's – I don't know what I said. I was something along the lines of, hey, man, that's on you, but we shouldn't be talking about this. And then sure as shit, it's like thump, thump. And I was like, oh, my God, they blocked it. And, like, I grabbed his arm, and Kevin's doing the call because Washington returned on the sideline. And I'm, like, shaking him. And I want to say we went to a break, and we just looked at each other, and we were like, oh, my God.
I know.
It actually played out exactly what we were hoping was we made the joke about jinxing him and he split it down the middle and everyone moved on. Never in a million years did we actually think it wasn't going to be good.
We felt bad for the kid, obviously. But then to finish the story later in the game, obviously he missed another one. And then it was like, okay, you want to see him make one here. So he comes out, you know, they throw the ball at the end with Cooper Rush just to give him a chance.
Right.
And he comes out to kick a 50-yarder. And I go, all right, you know, try to get him back on track. He's 9 for 9 from 50 plus this year. Olsen grabs my bicep and nearly rips it off my shoulder because he couldn't believe that I said that. And I got to be honest, once the kick went through, I was like, oh, all right. Thank God that went in.
You have a lot of things that are going through your minds. I don't know if you thought of what happened. I know y'all didn't have the Cowboys wild card game last year when they beat the Buccaneers, but the Brett Maher meltdown was like rolling through everybody's minds. Like, oh my gosh, because he had a really great season up until then. And then I know y'all did have the San Francisco loss and there was the Trent Williams, you know, beef or whatever at the beginning. Like everybody was just kind of pre-living that in their minds all over again. Yeah, way to go. I don't know who to blame because I guess I didn't know that you had a hand in that too, Greg. But Kevin, you seemed like the person who authored the phenomenon and then you tweeted about it. You apologized to Cowboys fans. And I thought that was an appropriate, you know, kind of thing to ask because of why y'all are here. Y'all are here on behalf of DiGiorno's. And Kevin, you just like, you want kickers to miss. Like this is for a good cause for all of us.
This is a perfect, really a perfect segue, RJ. It's just that's a professional by you. Yeah. We want doinks. We want DiGiorno doinks, right? Like, so fans fired up for the big game, obviously. And here's something to root for. Okay. Everyone loves free pizza. Well, the good news is if you get any kind of doink in the game, you could register starting tomorrow at DiGiornoDoinks.com. You win free pizza. So, and here, and Greg, listen, on my behalf, before you say I'm going to jinx every kicker, you could doink and then go in, and you still can get a free pizza out of the deal, okay? So everyone can be happy. Kickers can be happy. It's not my fault, but maybe you get a pizza out of the deal.
Bank shots count. Have y'all ever had a DiGiorno's or anything in the booth, Greg? I imagine y'all have had many a meal at different times.
We only eat turduckins in the booth.
You know, y'all didn't have
turkey legs.
Yeah, y'all didn't have the Cowboys game on Thanksgiving, and you know, I'm a little bit sore about the fact that you had the Packers because that was the moment Jordan Love like really heated up, and you know, we don't have to talk about everything else, but
we gave him all the motivation he needed.
On the subject, I guess, of the Cowboys' failures, again, as two people who know the team really well, Kevin, you and I were talking right before Greg got here about how the playoff loss was so jarring. And I mean, I think I speak for Cowboys fans in saying they're besides themselves. We have no idea kind of how to feel. Greg, I mean, what is your assessment? I mean, in terms of what they can do, what they should do, because you can make an argument for all sorts of different things at this moment in time, because especially after a playoff loss like that, you're just shook and you really have to kind of pick yourself back up and dust yourself off.
Yeah, I don't think anyone within the organization and certainly the fan base, you know, I know there were some bad memories of the divisional round and I'm sorry, the wild card round and getting past the divisional. And I know that was all always kind of in the background. That was always kind of a story. Can Dallas get back to a championship game for the first time in, I don't know, 28 years, whatever it was. And I get that, but I don't think anybody anticipated. I don't think them losing was a shock. It wasn't us. Like, I wouldn't have picked them to lose, but I didn't go into that game saying, oh my God, I don't think Green Bay can stay close. Like we thought going in Green Bay's offense was going to be a handful, and they had enough pieces on defense to cause at least a little trouble to keep the scoring to a, you know, at least to a degree. And again, no one thought it would be 27-0 with 2 seconds left in the first half. But so going in, we thought it could be a close game that Green Bay could compete. I don't think anybody saw it going the way it did. And when you win 12 games 3 years in a row and you're number one scoring offense and you're a top five defense and your specialty, when you have the season Dallas did, and then you compound the way the end of the year went that aligned for them to kind of just fall into a home playoff game as the two seed, it seemed like everything was lining up. All right, this is the year. It's the Dallas versus San Francisco NFC Championship rematch. Here we go. And it came crashing down. So I get it, right? I understand why there was that emotional reaction of, we've got to get a new coach. We've got to get a new quarterback. We've got to blow it all up. This is never going to work. And I think that's a natural reaction when there's disappointment and a thing comes to a sudden end. But I do think they got it right. I do think when you've had the level of success they've had, you know, 36 wins in 3 years is nothing to shake a stick at in the NFL. That is really, really good consistency. The next thing for them is they got to get over the hump, right? And that's adding some pieces on the second level on defense. That's continuing to fine tune offensively in the postseason. How can they have a little bit more of a run game? How can they have a little bit more balance? Because playoff football is a little different. So I think that's the constant evolution of just improving. But I mean, you look around some of the best coaches, some of the best teams in the league, and they haven't sniffed an NFC championship or AFC championship game in a long time either. People don't realize it is so hard to get there. And that's why the Mahomes of the world and 49ers have really dominated their respective conferences in that regard. Everybody else is kind of fighting for scraps right now.
Last one for y'all, Kevin, as the vocal author of so many great moments in the regular season for the Cowboys this year, which is the one that comes to mind? You got to close your eyes and pick the moment from the 2023 Dallas Cowboys season that y'all were a part of.
Wow.
There's a lot. I mean, so it might take you a while. I mean, 9 games, you know, we experienced y'all for 36 quarters.
I know. Gosh, we did so many, you know, and it's not even this year. I mean, even just going back the last 2 years, we've had so many awesome moments. And I agree with Greg. Like, you know, I agree with everything that Greg said, and certainly about this team. And, you know, just because it felt like they certainly had a chance, but I think they're on to something here. The best moment this year, gosh, I don't know if there's a singular moment for me. I'll say this. I really enjoyed the Dak to CD connections throughout the year. You know, Dak had his best year. And that's the thing about, you know, everyone, all Mike McCarthy, whatever. Well, Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott had their best years together, right? And so I think just Dak jumping to a new level with his play, to me, that's what I enjoyed. I know, and I know the last one was a sour taste in the mouth of the playoff loss. It always is if you go out in the playoffs. But I just think he was so superb this year and so many things that he did in his just competitive level that I really enjoy watching him play. I know that's not a specific play. If you're going for one specific play, the one that I always go back to is the one from last year, the one on the Christmas Eve game.
Third and 30.
When he hit T.Y. Hilton up top for like 60 yards. That's like one of my favorite plays that I've called for the Cowboys in the last couple of years.
That's a good one. And you also smushed the Eagles in the process. So we'll totally take that. DiGiornoDoinks.com. I don't think y'all get to hear this a lot. So as somebody who speaks for a fan base that heard y'all, thank you very much. I mean, you help make memories that people remember forever with whoever they're watching games with and things like that. And while the Cowboys haven't won a Super Bowl, to your point, Greg, and your point too, Kevin, they've been two really successful years over these last couple of seasons. So thank y'all for being a part of our Sunday afternoons every week.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks so much.
Hey, man, appreciate it. Enjoyed it.
From data privacy to the future of TV, retail media, and beyond, the world of digital marketing is constantly in flux. So how can you keep up? Well, The Current Report is there for you. Each week, marketing leaders on the cutting edge give you the latest insight. So if it's creating a buzz, they'll be talking about it. Subscribe to The Current Report wherever you get your podcasts. Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.